I'm Richard Antoine, Executive Director of InterpreterEd.com. This week, I spoke with Marisol Lomeli, a professional, certified healthcare interpreter who provides in-person interpreting services in the greater Los Angeles area. She also performs telephonic and video interpreting for hospitals, clinics, and ancillary facilities throughout the U.S. via HCIN, the Healthcare Interpreting Network. Ms. Lomeli has expertise in simultaneous interpreting, a mode of interpreting in which the interpreter speaks at the same time as the speaker. This is the mode commonly seen at the UN and major conferences, but which is also the most beneficial mode for group therapy sessions and when working with patients who are in an agitated state. Before establishing her independent practice, she worked in the Los Angeles County Court System for 25 years. In addition to being an active professional, Ms. Lomeli is an instructor for InterpreterEd.com. Let's take a listen. So what is a typical day like for you?
Okay, I'll give you a typical day when I work at home. When I work from home, I wake up by 5 in the morning and try to eat breakfast. I'll be between 5 and 5:30. Try to eat breakfast before because I get very hungry in the morning. And I start working between 6 in the morning and 6:30. I get dressed just from the waist up. I have my pajamas. And I go to my office and I get my computer ready, check my video, and start interpreting. And I start interpreting from 6:30 in the morning sometimes till 4:30. I do take my lunch hours and I do take my breaks. And that's my typical day when I work from home. I do get up every 5 minutes because you do need to take a break because you get mentally exhausted. And I try to walk and stretch because I get tired of sitting down the whole day. When I go out on the field, like on Thursdays, I work in a women's shelter and I do simultaneous interpretation for the parenting class or parenting group for the moms. And I do individual counseling the rest of the hours. Once I'm done with that assignment, I come home and I continue working until 6-7 o'clock at night.
Now, tell me more about the Thursday. I understand that you volunteer. Is that correct?
Well, on Thursdays, I have guaranteed 4 hours to work in the morning for the shelter. And any hours after that, I'm available. If they let me know about 2-3 days in advance, if they need me to stay longer hours, I volunteer the longer hours. And I also, because it's simultaneous interpretation, I take my equipment and I don't charge the usage of my equipment. So when they need me, when the shelter needs me, I do interpreting for them, for the moms.
Tell me more about those kinds of encounters.
Those encounters working in a domestic violence, in order for me to work there, I felt that I couldn't do a good job if I did not understand what is domestic violence. So I took a class through the state, a 40-hour course to train about domestic violence, to understand the process in order for me to understand what I was going to go do. Once I took that training, I continued working at the shelter, and mostly I would categorize it as mental health because you're working with clinicians and social workers. I interpret from one particular clinician, and I do interpretations for the moms whenever they need help and talk to the clinician. For mental health encounters, it's very difficult to use consecutive mode because when someone is in high emotions expressing their feelings, you don't have the luxury to say, excuse me, can you please speak in short sentences? It's impossible. So either you have to become a very good note taker or turn into simultaneous mode. But one of the challenges when you're doing simultaneous interpretation could get very confusing and very overwhelming for the patient and the clinician. When you're in your good senses, you could speak, stop, no big deal. But when you're stressed and you hear another voice over and over, the session becomes more intense. Mm-hmm. So because one of the things that I enjoy doing is simultaneous, I bought my own equipment. So I take my equipment and they use the equipment, and I sit in a corner. I try to not make myself visible, and I'm interpreting simultaneous, and the provider and the patient are able to talk to each other face-to-face without me being a disruption to their to the therapeutic encounter. So for me, simultaneous equipment for mental health has worked very well. And it works for the clinician, and it works for the patients. They have expressed their feelings that it works. Mm-hmm. And also when I'm doing the class, everyone wears the equipment, whether you speak English, half of them is Spanish, half of them is in English. And when you use the equipment, everyone has the headset. And I'm sitting in a corner. Occasionally I have to change positions to see the person speaking, but everyone has a chance for their voice to be heard completely and accurately. So I think that's something new that the shelter has, and is work really well. It's almost like if I'm not there, like if they don't have an interpreter.
So tell me more about that. You're using equipment so that everybody can understand. So that means that if you're in this joint, if you're in the session, that means there are English speakers and Spanish speakers in the session. The clinician speaks English. So when one of the English attendees or participants, when they speak in English, you're interpreting to Spanish for the other people that are attending that session so that they understand what the English speakers are saying.
Correct. And vice versa. When the Spanish speakers want to share something, then I have to interpret into English for everyone else. So it keeps switching back and forth. And it usually goes pretty fast-paced. Before, when they couldn't use interpreters, they had someone doing it consecutive, perhaps someone that was not trained, just a bilingual person. And it was more, it's almost like imagine an arena of people sitting around in a circle and the interpreter in the middle. So the whole shift of the conversations were going through the interpreter, and the interpreter just, or the bilingual person, just interpreting as much as they were able to get. And at points it's stopping the patients because it's too, you cannot retain that much information, so they have to stop. But now when the equipment is used and the interpreter is in a corner interpreting on both languages, they have a more meaningful encounter. They get understood. They feel that everything that they've been saying is being said. Nothing's missing. And the interpreter is not the center of attention.
What would you say is the most difficult type of assignment for an interpreter?
Some of the most difficult assignments are when you have to work in the IC unit or emergency room, mm-hmm. where it's, you see people that are actually really sick, mm-hmm. or dying. That's one. Another one is when they have to give someone a bad diagnosis. Another one that is really difficult is when you have a multidisciplinary team where they're dealing with some type of genetic defect on a child. And you have different doctors, the social worker, the nutritionist, the heart doctor, or now the lung specialist. And those sessions could last a couple of hours, up to 3 hours, sometimes more. So when you're dealing with situations like that, I mean, if you're an interpreter that, let's say that you're not certified, you just became an interpreter, you're just interpreting, I would suggest don't take those assignments. As soon as you find out that you get an assignment like that, if you really do not know the vocabulary or you're not trained or you've never done it, I would say you have to let your agency know. Because this is your main, I mean, the main concern of the interpreter is the healthcare and well-being of the patient. So you, this is not, oh, I'm going to take a two-hour job and they pay me and hooray. You know, if you have to take responsibility that you're putting someone's life in your hand. So my recommendation is don't take the job if you're not trying to do it. Now, once you're there, if there's something, I mean, I would have not taken a job if I didn't feel that I was trained to do it. If once I'm there, if there's something that I don't know, I know that I'm going to learn it by the next day. So like, for example, one time I did, it was a woman that was having her second heart transplant. And I had to interpret in the room with the heart machine pumping. And it's a huge machine and it was very loud. And I had to interpret for the psychiatrist, because they have to go through a psychiatric evaluation to see if this person is going to be able to receive a transplant. And the whole family was there, her children, her grandchildren. It was about 10 people, 15 people in the room, half of them bilingual. And at that moment, you get really nervous because you know someone's going to be checking your errors. Am I going to be saying it correctly? And they're doing the psychological evaluation. And then the mom says the most beautiful words to their children, like if she's going to die. And the children, I mean, the children are crying and I'm interpreting. And the machine is super loud. It's intense. And one of my tears falls in my paper. And I could hear one of the kids saying, the interpreter is crying. And I finished my interpretation. I said goodbye. I left. And I just broke down in the car. But I felt like a failure because I felt, you know, my job is not to break down. My job is to be professional and learn that this is what I'm going to be doing. Then I should not cry. So that was my first and last time. And I never cried. I haven't cried since. I cried a lot in the car, in the parking lot, at home, but not ever at work. Because I feel that I'm a professional, the way the nurse is a professional, and the way the LBN, and the way the doctor and the specialist, and I don't see any of them crying. So I shouldn't cry. I could cry, but later, but not there. So those are very difficult, challenging sessions.
As an interpreter, one of your roles is to make sure the patient understands.
Yeah. In fact, I was interpreting a palliative session where they had a meeting and they're giving the family options. And it was a team of doctors explaining palliative care and curative care, but they were using hospice care, then later changed it to palliative care. And they were explaining, and this was phone. So when you're doing phone interpretation, you cannot see people's expressions. But the way the wife was responding, I was able to understand that she wasn't getting it, that she wasn't understanding. So at that moment, I stopped the session and I said, the interpreter feels that the family is not understanding. They're not understanding about palliative care. And so one of the providers said, well, we have plenty of people here that speak English. Let me ask the children, are you guys understanding? And because she says, perhaps it's a communication error. And meaning my translation error. So they asked the children, and the children, we don't understand what you're talking about in English. They responded in English. So that's when the doctors realized, oh my God, we're not communicating correctly. We apologize. Let me start all over again. And they started explaining what is palliative care, that is curative care, where they provide comfort, medication for pain, medication for nausea, oxygen, until the person can hang in there anymore. It's not a new treatment. It's not curative care. But that session took 2 hours, and it was very exhausting.
Are you ever in the position to observe interpreters in the field?
Occasionally, yes.
And do you ever observe errors being made?
A lot.
What kind of errors have you seen?
Errors of omission, addition, and changing of the meaning. And I think one of the things that I observe is because I think the interpreters, even though we tell them you carry a notebook and carry a pencil, because that's the interpreter's, that's your tool at that moment. So I think interpreters don't take notes. And sometimes it's usually the therapist, because that's what you see it the most, where it's more exposed. They don't speak in short sentences, and they're speaking really fast. And a lot of new interpreters, I think they're afraid of asking, can you speak in short sentences? Or they're afraid to say, I did not understand. So they just keep saying omitting things or adding things, or sometimes saying things that were not said. just to keep going.
So are these interpreters who are have been trained and are certified, or these are people who are just kind of bilinguals?
I think they're the interpreters that are not, I'm not sure if they're trained or not. I think they just, I think some agencies hire them because for the cost, I think maybe it's, I don't want to say it in a bad way that it could be offensive, but, you know, they probably don't get paid much and they're probably just bilingual people. And they say, oh, I could be an interpreter. I charge this fee and it sounds great for them, but they're not trained. I have seen, I did notice one time it was an interpreter that actually received instruction. And I noticed that she was really nervous. And we happened to sit together and we were talking, and she was telling me that she was really nervous and she took a class, but being in person, it was completely different. So she was asking me for advice. And I told her, you know, if you do not understand something, most likely it wasn't correctly explained. So ask, the interpreter needs clarification. Is this what you were trying to say? You know, don't say, oh, I think you said it wrong. Just say, were you trying to say this? Did I understand correctly? And if they're speaking too fast, just say, please speak in short sentences. And so I'm able to interpret. Even though after you've been an interpreter for a while, you have to learn to take good notes and be able to let the provider at least finish the train of thought. So you do have to learn to be a good note taker.
How does someone get to you know, to your point?
Oh, yeah. So I have people that are like in their early 20s and all the way to their 60s. Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't matter whether you're super smart and have 2 degrees or you're in your early 20s. It's how much effort you put in, how much you want to do it. And if you're really dedicated to, like, if you really focus, this is what I want. Even if you're a heritage speaker in Spanish, mm-hmm. that you were born in this country, you learned Spanish here, I've seen those people become very good interpreters. So I think it's just how much you really enjoy the profession and how much effort you put in, mm-hmm. and how much you study. Because, I mean, I had this girl that was really smart in your class, and she had graduated from college with straight A's and really bright. She never arrived on time, and she didn't have that desire. I mean, I don't know. She just thought she could be an interpreter because she was bilingual. Mm. But she was not. She was not born to be an interpreter. I don't know. But I guess that if you dedicate yourself, you have to like the job and dedicate yourself. If you don't like it, then you can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll be bad.
Mm-hmm. What would you say was your most memorable interpreting experience? And when I say most memorable, what, when you look back, you had pride, or it just had an effect on you that has changed how you approach interpreting?
I have so many moments. I don't know which one to pick. There's so many. My goodness. The most memorable one that I went to Cedars-Sinai, and they put an assignment and they put 2 hours liver. Oh, okay. 2 hours liver. I thought it was, I don't know, an office visit. And I show up and it's an 8-hour assignment for liver transplant. And the first session was a 1-hour class about organ transplantation. And then when I arrived there, luckily, because I don't ever like to be late, I showed up to my assignment 1 hour before. So I realized what was that it was going to be a transplant simultaneous. And at that time, I didn't have equipment. And so I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? So I arrived 1 hour before, right before lunchtime, so it gave me 2 hours to study. So I went online on UNOS, and I learned about organ transplant, and I started making notes, and I did my simultaneous interpretation with a doctor that wanted to finish in 1 hour, and it was super fast. And at one point, I had to summarize, and I had to apologize to the patient, and at points, I was able to follow up certain chunks, but certain parts I didn't. So at the end of the session, when I went into the room with the patient, the doctor had this 25-page document written in English about everything about the patient needs to know about organ transplant and everything that they talk about in the class. And the doctor asked me, you need to make sure that you read this into Spanish because we don't have copies in English. And so I went through the document. Actually, it wasn't that it was difficult language. It was just long, but I was there for 8 hours. So I did a whole site translation of the document. But I had, just the week prior to that, I had taught the class about liver and all the parts of the liver and the function of the liver. And so I was very familiar with the liver. And so I felt pretty comfortable. And I felt comfortable staying in the assignment because I teach medical terminology. So I was very comfortable with the vocabulary. But after that, I made a book for me about organ transplant in UNOS. And I got as much information as I could. And I study everything about organ transplant. So for me, that was very memorable.
So I think the average listener, when I hear this story, is going to be shocked and dismayed to hear that you were arrived at the assignment. You found out it was about liver transplant, and you immediately went and started doing research. Is that normal for an interpreter to do research just before the assignment?
Well, it's normal for me, but now that I train interpreters, I let them know that they have to be ready. What I teach them now is, you see a word, call the agency and find out, what is this about? Try to get as much information as you can about the assignment, but I do tell them, be ready to do an interpretation that difficult. So what I teach my students is, because when you arrive to an assignment, you cannot be using your cell phone. You cannot be using your computer because they don't think that you're doing research. They think that you're chit-chatting, texting, or emailing someone. And it doesn't look professional. So for every session that I go, whether it's diabetics, high blood pressure, or wound injury for diabetics, or nutrition, liver, kidney, heart, I made different books that I carry with me with all the vocabulary. So if I see liver, I get my liver transplant book and everything about the liver. If it's something about heart, I get everything about cardiology and different diseases with all my glossaries. So, yes, I advise interpreters to arrive on time, ask questions, what the session is going to be about, and if you cannot do it, then let them know, you know, this is beyond my skill. You need to call another interpreter. If they know they want to keep you, at least you disclose it that you're going to do your best. But the interpreter has to be prepared. You have to study. You have to learn. You don't even have to memorize. You just have to understand it so you're able to interpret.
Now, how can an interpreter, if you think about this, you had this assignment where it turned out to be much bigger than you expected for a liver transplant. Mm-hmm. How can an interpreter be prepared for liver transplants, heart transplants, diabetes, mental health sessions? All these, I mean, we have medical specialists for all kinds of things. Do we have medical specialists for interpreters?
No. Unfortunately, when you arrive to a session, because you're bilingual, they think by magic, you know, every single word in the dictionary, and they expect you that you will know everything, but it's very difficult to interpret a session when you don't understand the content. So the duty of an interpreter, that is why when you take the test, they ask you for medical terminology, general knowledge on medical terminology. But it's just not knowing that, okay, heart is corazón, you know, vein is vena. It's not that. You have to understand how the body works, how the heart works, how the lungs work, and understand at least a bunch of diseases, the most common diseases that affect the lungs. Like for the kidney, you know that is diabetes, high blood pressure. As an interpreter, you must know everything that you can know about diabetes, nutrition, wound care, eye care, because that's what most Americans suffer. The other one is high blood pressure, heart attacks, strokes, because Americans eat such a bad diet. I mean, it's just, I mean, we see children now with fatty livers, right? So you as an interpreter have to become familiar with the most common diseases. In fact, in one of the classes, that this was a three-month class, that it was expanded, you know, 40 hours, but 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I gave them an assignment and I made them make a book of, you know, diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol, strokes, and I don't remember the other disease that I gave them. But those are the most basic ones. If you as an interpreter know the most basic diseases, most likely you will get an assignment like that. And occasionally you'll get something rare. But you also have to understand who your agency contracts with. So let's say that you sign up with a new agency, and this agency works for a certain hospital, and the hospital specializes in this. I think it's the job of the interpreter to find out what is it that they do in this hospital, what type of assignments are they going to give me, because some of them is just probably just podiatry. Another, it could just be eye. So your job as an interpreter is find out who your agency is contracting with, where are they going to send you, and what type of assignments you're going to do before you even take a job. So you have to do your research to make your life easier. And when I teach that class, that's what I teach my students. You have to be very resourceful. You have to learn how to find information, how to learn something really fast without using a dictionary and memorize what you, well, not memorize it, understand it.
So it's more than just knowing vocabulary?
It's more than knowing vocabulary. It's understanding. It's, how could you interpret something if you don't understand it? You're lost. You don't feel like you're, oh, that's the way I feel. Yeah. So you have to understand it.
You know, there's been discussion among legislators and some taxing and regulatory authorities about requiring or forcing, or however you want to put it, but treating interpreters and translators as employees, so that they would no longer be able to be they'd no longer be able to work as independent contractors, but they would have to be employees. What are your thoughts on that kind of idea?
Well, it all depends. I guess in my personal point of view, I was an employee for somebody for 25 years. And more than anything, I just wanted my freedom. I wanted to decide on my own schedule. I wanted to work when I wanted to work and not work when I didn't want to work. But I also have my husband that he has benefits, and I have my retirement put aside. So I did wait it 25 years before I quit to secure that. But if you have someone that doesn't have any benefits, that is struggling to get jobs and becoming an employee, may work well for them if it's fair. So if they're going to make you an employee, are they going to give you 40 hours? Are they going to give you medical? Are they going to give you 401k? Are they going to give you sick days and vacation days? So if it will be a good trade-off if you get those benefits. But if you don't get those benefits, then I don't think it will be reasonable to make someone be someone else's employee. Well, at least at this point, I wouldn't give up my freedom.
Do you have any regrets?
No, not at all. I love my job. I'm happy. Yeah, no. I don't regret quitting the job, the court. No, not at all. I'm glad I did it. It was difficult to think that you're going to leave a county job that has retirement and you get pay and you get sick days pay, you get vacation. But I gave it up for my passion, and it was worth it. Yeah. And I didn't do it because, oh, it's the money. No, I did it because I had a passion.
Being an interpreter is not always an easy career, but it is a rewarding way to earn a living. If you're bilingual and you want to make a positive difference in the lives of others, please consider becoming a professional interpreter. Find out more at www.interpreterred.com. Like us and follow us online at facebook.com/interpreterred or on Twitter @interpreterred. I'm Richard Antoine. And thanks for listening.